Scripture reading is Mark chapter 9, verses 2 to 13. Mark chapter 9, verses 2 to 19, to 13. All right. After 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up a high mountain, where they were all alone. There he was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say. They were so frightened. Then a cloud appeared and enveloped them, and a voice came from the cloud. "This is my son, whom I love. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they no longer saw anyone with them except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus gave them orders to tell and not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. They kept the matter to themselves, discussing what rising from the dead meant. And they asked him, "Why do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first?" Jesus replied, "To be sure, Elijah does come first and restores all things. Why then is it written that the Son of Man must suffer much and be rejected?" The word of the Lord.
Well, we're glad that you are here with us this morning on a first Sunday in June. Wow, we're getting there. Almost into summer months. A little bit of rain to help our flowers along. We have a section in our front garden which has a hard time growing, so we've replaced a bit of sod with a fresh piece of sod, right? But you need a lot of rain to make that sod grow, apparently. And without it, it just dies again. So Beth prayed a great storm, and now we have this rainy weather. It's what happens when you're a saint. When you're a saint, things happen, right? James says, "The prayers of an effective person best accomplishes much." That's you. So we're in Pentecost season, so if you're visiting with us, this is a piece of art that represents the fire of the Holy Spirit working in our hearts and minds as we are receptive, as we are open. And that idea of being receptive and open is really what this text for us is about in Mark 9. So as you know, just a background, there are 4 Gospels in Matthew, Mark, and Luke are what are called the Synoptic Gospels. And the Synoptic Gospels tell the story of Christ in similar ways. They're not exact. It's through the eyes of each person, Matthew, Mark, and Luke writing. John is not part of the Synoptics. It's a different thing altogether. Each of the Synoptics have this story of Christ on the mountain. And so, in the midst of that story, a voice from heaven says, "This is my beloved Son, listen to him, pay attention to him." And so that's really the call. As we move through the text, it's about us listening to him, our willingness to listen to Christ. So last week, we saw that Jesus and the disciples were in the north of Israel, way up where that top circle is. Indeed, it was beyond Israel, and really as it went, it goes all the way back to the days of David. And Jesus was with his disciples and took them to an area where there was a famous cave, and it's called the Cave of Pan. And that area with the circle there is Paneos. And in this cave, there were crypts. And in each of the crypts, there was a bust of one of the Greek Roman gods. So Jesus takes them to that area and asks the question there, who do people say that I am? And so then we have the disciples answering, well, you know, some say that you're Elijah. We hear about him here. Some say that you're John the Baptist. Some say you're one of the great prophets. That's what people thought of Jesus at the time. Jesus then turns around and says, well, who do you say that I am? And Peter, who is the one that we're really tracking through this series, has this insight that you are the Christ, you are the Messiah. Beautiful statement. You are the Christ, Christos, which is the Messiah, the anointed one. That's what Peter thought. But he asks that question, Jesus, in the area where all the other Greek and Roman gods were celebrated, particularly the god of Pan. So it's on people's minds in that area, because it was well known. That cave is still there. Crypts are still there. The busts of the gods are no longer there, but you could see where they went. So who do people say that I am? Who do you say that I am? That's the key question for us. Who do we really think that Jesus is? Who is Jesus for us? Who do you say that I am? So we begin the text, and we note 6 days later. Well, that is a reference to that event. That's why I started with that. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John, the three disciples of the 12 that are the closest to Jesus, apparently. He led them up to a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. So if we go back to this map, the bottom circle is where Mount Tabor is. And in the history of the Christian church, when people think, where was Jesus transfigured, they usually think of that mountain, Mount Tabor. Mount Tabor is where we meet God, if you like, in this spiritual formation course, Mount Tabor. But the other option is way up in the top is Mount Hermon. And Mount Hermon may be actually the better mountain because that's where they were. So maybe they stayed there and they went up that mountain. It says they went up a high mountain. And Mount Hermon is the highest mountain in the whole region. It's the big mountain, over 9,000 feet. So maybe Jesus went up there with his three disciples. The point is, as we read this, is that they were alone. So they went up there and they were in solitude. On the mountaintop. I don't know, you guys ever gone to mountaintops? Some of you, I'm sure, have. Beth and I were talking about the area in Canada of Banff. A number of you, I'm sure, have been to Banff over the years. And there's a map, or not a map, what am I thinking? There's a trail, okay? A trail called the Sunshine Meadows. And it's the highest hike in Canada of a hike to go on. It's over 10,000 feet. And you can walk the meadows way up in the mountains. Up there you are. And when I was up there, I was definitely alone. I was alone. So we have a chance to meet with God on the mountain. In the scriptures, many great things happen on the mountaintop. It becomes a symbol for meeting God. Okay, so they're up there on the mountain. That's where we begin. And we're calling this the Christophany on the mountain. A theophany is an event where God reveals himself to us. So when Moses is behind the rock and God goes before him and Moses is able to see the back of God, that's what's known as a theophany. God reveals himself, a theophany. So a Christophany is when we see the divinity of Christ. That's the name. Whether that ever happens for us, will ultimately one day, a Christophany. So on this mountaintop then, Jesus and his disciples go up there. I mean, note in this story, Jesus does not speak. There's no word from Christ on the mountain that's recorded for us here in this gospel. But we're told that he morphs in, the word is metamorphosis, He changes into his divine state. In the English, it says transfigured. It's metamorpho, metamorphosis. Just like a cocoon into a butterfly. Just like that. Beautiful, beautiful change, a beautiful expression. Jesus morphs into his glorious state. He's still in a human form, but there's this dazzling radiance and whiteness about Christ in this situation. He doesn't say anything. He's just transformed before these three disciples. On the mountaintop, the disciples are with Jesus. They're meeting God. So, I don't know. Can we get our heads around that one? Jesus transformed. Jesus morphed in this amazing, dazzling way. It's a little bit like when Jesus is shown in after the resurrection, when he appears to his disciples. He's in human form, but he's different. He's changed. There's something about him that's, they know it's Christ, but it's a different expression. So Christophany on the mountain, metamorphosis on the mountain. And so the idea here is it's an epiphany, all right? Words are used to describe it, but the words fail. It's an intuitive connection with God here. I don't know if you've ever had any kind of experience like that, where somehow you feel connected to God, but it's hard to explain it in words. Could be you on a mountaintop. Could be you in a cave somewhere. Could be you in the desert. Wherever. Often it's in silence and it's in solitude, where we have a sense of God with us. But it's hard to describe it, and if you tried to describe it, it probably wouldn't be very convincing to others. There's a Latin phrase, the mysterium tremendum, the tremendous mystery of God. That's what's revealed here, and it's visual, and there will be an auditory sense, but it's this different reality. So can God show up that way in our lives still? I would say for sure. God can break through, and all of a sudden, there's a connection. What happens then? Well, all of a sudden, two figures appear. And they happen to be Elijah and Moses. So by the way, if you want a sense, you know, is there life after death? Well, this story says, yeah, because Elijah and Moses are standing there talking with Jesus, right? So it's a pretty basic representation of life after death. Well, here they are. And the disciples seem to know who they are. And they're talking. Mark doesn't say what they're talking about, but in Luke we have this reference. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to Jesus. And they appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, because he's on the way to Jerusalem, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Talking about his departure meant they were talking about his death. They were talking about his route to suffering, to the cross, and ultimately resurrection. So Moses and Elijah are there talking to Jesus. So the question is, well, why do they show up and why is this important? Well, I would suggest that it's actually for Jesus' own encouragement. Jesus is going to the cross. And three times in the Gospel of Mark, he talks about this. He lets his disciples know before it ever happens that this is going to happen. Death by the cross was a terrible death, right? If you were a Roman citizen, you couldn't be crucified. It wasn't allowed. It was too awful. You couldn't do it. But if you were a non-Roman or a non-Roman citizen, and you were a scoundrel, well, you might end up being crucified. Terrible death. And Jesus knows that's how he's going to die. On the cross, he says, Father, if there's any way that this can go down without me dying on the cross, I'm up for it. But he says, your will be done. So that's his experience. In the Garden of Gethsemane, he's weeping. exchanging these conversations with the Father. So, makes sense, he wouldn't want to go through with it, really. Wouldn't want to do it unless he has to. And Moses and Elijah come along and they encourage him. Just as God encourages us when we need encouragement, I think. If we listen to him, if we look to him. So that's the first part of the story. And then we have our friend Peter. So Peter says to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. So why say anything? Why not just shut up? It probably would have made more sense to Peter just to shut up, man. You're talking to Jesus, Elijah, and Moses. You don't have to speak here. But Peter is the guy. He just kind of jumps in, even in that dynamic. He speaks. Three shelters may reference sukkahs, three tents, the Sukkot festival, known as the Festival of Booths or the Festival of Tabernacles. Jewish community would celebrate that every year. Maybe Peter is saying, hey, we'll build three tents for each of you, and we'll prolong this experience. We're having a good time. Let's just stay with it. But in the midst of that, a cloud overshadows them. And from the cloud, there came a voice, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." So they're on a high mountain, and then there's this cloud, and they hear a voice. I remember one time we were in Bolivia, and we were climbing over the top of the peaks on the way to La Paz. And when you get up there, it gets very high, 5,000 meters. And when we went over the ridge, we were in the clouds. We were so high, the clouds are right there. We're going through the clouds. It was very interesting. So in that cloud-enveloped experience, the cloud in the Old Testament celebrates and symbolizes the presence of God. They hear this voice. "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." In Jesus' own baptism, it goes, "You are my beloved son, in whom I am well pleased." Second person, "You are my son." Here it's third person, "This is my son. Listen to him." And so the invitation there is for them to listen to this voice of God. "This is my beloved son, listen to him. Listen to his words. Listen to his teaching. Be encouraged." So this same teaching comes down to us in the scriptures. So when you read the scriptures, you are listening to the teaching of Jesus. We are very fortunate in Christendom to have these books, these synoptic gospels and others that reference the words of Jesus. They go all the way back to Jesus' time, a few years after Jesus' death, a generation later, hundreds of documents. So we can read those if you like. You can get into the scriptures and hear Jesus' voice. Interesting that Peter and James and John, why is this important? Well, I would say it's important because now it's to encourage the disciples that Jesus is who he is. Because soon he's going to go to Jerusalem and he will be crucified. So they're invited to remember this reality. James was the first martyr, well, one of the first martyrs. Not the first, but one of the first martyrs. This James, not many years later, is killed by Herod. So when he's waiting for that death, I'm sure this event was significant. But at the same time, Peter is thrown in prison, and the same thing's going to happen to him. He's going to be killed by Herod. And he's only saved because God intervenes and an angel breaks him out of prison. You can read about that story in the scriptures. So I'm sure this event was actually pretty significant for these three. John ends up in Patmos, isolated, exiled, lives to an old man, but still challenged for his life. Encouragement for the disciples, encouragement for Jesus. So come home to this. How do we listen to God's voice today? How do we hear Him? How do we pay attention? Pay attention to Him. Do we want to listen to Him? It comes down to whether we have open hearts or not. Will we be open to the voice of God in our lives? And He speaks at all ages. In fact, I would suggest that He speaks to younger people more than He speaks to older people in a powerful, powerful way like that. That's what I think. When you are younger, you might actually hear an auditory voice. I've heard the voice of God on a number of occasions. All I would say, 25 and younger, I've felt impressions of God, 40, 45, you know, whenever, but not the voice. So does God always speak with the voice? No, not at all. But He does speak with the voice. And I would suggest it often happens when we are younger. Partly, I think, because our hearts are more receptive. They're still soft. They're still pliable. They're not hard. Samuel was just a little boy. Remember him? He hears the voice of God. He goes running to Eli. Eli tells him, go back to bed. I heard a voice. I think it's you. Keeps happening, and finally Eli says, if it happens again, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. He's just a child, right? So I say that, you know, the youth are in here today. You can hear God's voice, whether it's vocal or auditory, inside your mind, believe me, if we pay attention, we will hear from Jesus. We need to pay attention. We need to want to hear. But even if you're older, it can still happen. Just because it doesn't happen to me doesn't mean it won't happen to you. You may have a heart a lot softer than mine, Moyua. How do we hear God's voice? Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore but only Jesus. All of a sudden, the cloud's gone, the voice is gone, and they are there alone with Jesus. And I would say that's the way it often goes too. All of a sudden, you're on your own. The epiphany was there and it's gone. And now you're wondering, if was it there ever? Maybe I only thought I heard a voice. Maybe I didn't really hear a voice. Maybe I thought I saw something. And we rationalize it away. It's the way epiphanies are. They are there and then they're gone. And so, what does that mean? Well, then we need to remember. We need to remember. Peter says, for he received honor and glory from God the Father when that voice was conveyed to him by the majestic glory, saying, this is my Son, my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. We ourselves heard this voice come from heaven while we were with him on the holy mountain. Peter remembers this event, and it was very important to him. I saw the resurrected Christ, or at least the transfigured Christ. He saw the resurrected Christ later. He heard the voice. It was an epiphany. But the challenge is, you know, will we stay attentive to the epiphany? Remember, a friend of mine had a strong impression in his office one time of the presence of God, a warm glowing in his office, really feeling an impression. It was like he saw a halo. Years later, I was talking with him and asked him, well, do you ever remember that event? No, not anymore. Maybe I didn't. even see. So we don't always stay with it, which is sad. So we have the gift of God's presence with us. We want that to become a funding moment for our lives. How has God talked to you in the past? Hold on to that. We're invited to hold on to it, man. Don't let it slide. Don't let it go. So all of that is Epiphany. And then just briefly, as they're coming down the mountain, he orders them to tell no one about what they had seen until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. Finally, Jesus speaks. He's coming down the mountain, and now he speaks. And now his intellect is engaging his disciples, and he's saying, hey, don't talk about this until after I have been raised from the dead. Well, they don't really get that. They don't understand, but they'll understand a little later. But it starts the intellect. The conversation is now engaging. Cognitive language. And so we are invited to know Jesus both through the Epiphanies and also through our rational thinking and mind. It's both together. To read the scriptures, to read them, what are they really saying, and then be open for how that is impressed upon your heart and your mind and your life. Both go together. Not just word. It's word and spirit. Pentecost is the age of spirit. So what does God do for us in these mysterious ways? That's the invitation here. Disciples start talking about Malachi. Jesus says, well, Malachi, or Elijah has come in Malachi, and it was John the Baptist. He doesn't reference it by name there, but that's what's going on. But it's more the thinking process. That's how it engages us. So as we go away, what do we see? Well, the transfiguration is a prelude to God's glory in Jesus Christ. It was there to encourage Jesus, and it's there to encourage us. It acts as a glimpse into the true identity of Jesus. Who is Jesus? We said last week, Jesus is not just a great teacher. Jesus is not just a good model for us. He is that. Jesus is more. He reveals God to us as we have open hearts and open minds. That's the invitation. I want to know Jesus. It can be any age. I want to know Jesus. It passes through the root of suffering, as it will for all of us. All of us will go through suffering at some point. Goes through that root, but it ends in glory. And the whole thing is about paying attention to Jesus. Paying attention. I don't know, in this last week, anybody hear from God? Nobody heard from God. Wow. I say you have. How have you heard from God? How do we pay attention to His voice? How do we listen to Him? This is the invitation. Not to just go on automatic and slip by the whole thing. Marjorie, you hear from God last week? Yeah? Good. Sorry? Encouragement? Does encouragement count? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, for sure. Being encouraged. Hearing from God in different ways, eh? Rosalina? Rosalina's brother passed away yesterday. She's going to the Philippines now. How do we hear from God in all these times? In fact, let's pray for Rosalina right now, do we mind? It's hard to get a shock. No expectation of this. Father, I do pray for Rosalina. pray that you will encourage her heart as she travels, that she might be mindful of you on that long flight to the Philippines. Mindful that you are with her, that you love her, and you will reveal yourself to her even through this experience and this trip. So be with her as she's away. Help us, Lord, to be mindful and be remembering her as she is abroad. I pray in Jesus' name. Finally, listen to Jesus in the midst of the downward way. So pay attention, pay attention. One of the ways we pay attention is through communion. We celebrate, we remember, right? We remember again. That's what the word means. Remember again Jesus' death, Jesus' resurrection.